This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
I feel like either a relief pitcher coming out to close the game in the ninth inning, or I'm at Lane Stadium at Virginia Tech. Good morning, Andy and Randy. Not today. These soft, everyday hosts, oh, they get President's Day off. You know why? Because they're soft. They're as soft as an NBA player. That's what they are. Welcome, Rob Tribble, in for the next 4 hours. Got Garrett Chapman. He'll be chiming in. Very, very frequently, and we got a lot to get into, of course. The Kirk Cousins saga, now we have rumors associated with that. Is there a trade possibility? I don't necessarily see it. Of course, Braves pitchers and catchers and all the regulars. First spring training game coming up this weekend, I think on Sunday against Tampa Bay. Season opener, April 4th against the Marlins. NBA All-Star, all that was. And I got to admit to you, all I watched was the little snippets that showed up on my algorithm on social media. It just seemed like an overall joke. And can we retire Kevin Hart? Can we take Kevin Hart, Taylor Swift, The Rock, and Snoop and just put them on an island somewhere? Overexposure. Why does Snoop have to show up everywhere? Good Lord. But as for the All-Star game, well, I don't know. I think Team USA beat the national. Maybe that should be the format every year. Just make it the international team against the U.S. team. And what you got to do, though, here's my solution to it. You got to gin up geopolitical hate for all the foreign players. Luka Doncic from Slovenia. Now, Slovenia is a pretty safe, friendly country, very friendly to Americans. Well, make stuff up. Say they are a bastion of terrorism and child trafficking and drugs and everything else.
It's like what happens with the NHL All-Star Weekend. They booed the national anthem.
Oh, yeah, in Canada. There are three fights in the first 9 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Between USA,
I stood
USA
up and
beat Canada 3-1.
The whole time I was watching that. That was just unbelievable television.
And I think it's kind of refreshing that we have some hate for Canada. You know? Why not? But there is some geopolitical tension between the United States and Canada. I don't care what side you're on. It is what it is. And I think it kind of bled over. And you boo the national anthem in Montreal, and I think that kind of made the USA players feel a certain way. Three fights in the first 9 seconds. Meanwhile, at the NBA All-Star game, they had like 20-minute breaks so Kevin Hart could do his little bits that are just no longer funny. It's just not funny. But I spent a lot of time. And Garrett, how much is Saturday Night Live a part of your fabric growing up?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Enough to be understood. Of like Tina Fey and Seth Meyers were my that was my generation when I was growing up.
Because
it was solid,
you know. And when you look back, you know, the 50-year anniversary. And it was kind of weird they had it last night because I think the original air date was in October of 75. And they did it in February for whatever reason. I don't know. Who knows? But it was fun to watch. You know,
well, you don't want to compete with the NFL.
Oh, that's true, too.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that.
And you can't do it on Saturday night. If you do a three-hour special on Saturday night, it's not going to
during college football
season?
Well. No.
Well, it's even if it's just a regular Saturday night, you want to have Sunday night football. There's a reason Sunday night football does so well.
Yeah. And, you know, SNL is just part of the cultural fabric of me growing up. And I think everyone who has watched Saturday Night Live, loves it or hates it, we are always going to hold near and dear to our heart the cast that was on SNL when you were in college or in high school. That's the ones that's always going to resonate with you. And you're gonna kind of naysay the latter groups. Oh, it's just not funny anymore. I mean, my first taste was, of course, Eddie Murphy. He was the first real breakout star in my mind. Of course, Chevy Chase and Bill Murray were really breakout stars initially. But Eddie Murphy kind of reestablished the next group. And then I grew up on Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman, who was brilliant. John Lovitz, hilarious. Jan Hooks, went to Druid Hills High School from Decatur, Georgia, passed away. And it just makes me feel old. When you see Adam Sandler looking old, that was kind of disturbing. Rachel Dratch, when she played Debbie Downer, she really showed her age when she put the costume on. And I watched the homecoming concert, you know, when they had just a myriad of musical guests that have dotted SNL for the past 50 years. Eddie Vedder's looking old now. Eddie Vedder's turning into Bono. His face is getting bigger. His hairline is getting smaller, and he's clearly dyeing his hair and has turned to a weird combination of kind of like a caramel and dark color, and he just looks old. Everybody, Will Ferrell looks old. Everybody's old. We're not getting out of this mortal coil alive. None of us are getting out of this thing alive, but it was very nostalgic to see it. Adam Sandler picked up his guitar and did one of his funny songs. It was also, he almost started crying when he, you know, brought up Chris Farley in his song. And even John Belushi to a certain extent. And Jack Nicholson showed up out of nowhere. I was thinking, you know, what is he, 88 years old? And he introduced Adam Sandler. And I thought that he was like in the throes of dementia. That's why you never see him anymore. But he held it together long enough to introduce Adam Sandler. And, of course, the Weekend Update. You know, Michael Che and the other guy are hilarious. When they write each other jokes and they're just so racist, it's hysterical.
It's hysterical.
It is.
Oh, no, but then Bill Murray comes in.
Bill Murray
was fantastic. But he's also somebody who's kind of showing his age just a little bit.
Oh, well, oh my God.
I mean, how old is he?
I think he's 75.
Yeah, well, if he's 75, I mean.
Yeah, well.
And he's the old side of 75.
Mm-hmm. You know, he and his brother were just in town last week. I think they did two nights. Singing, a musical act at Variety Playhouse over there in Little Five Points. So SNL, that was fun to see, but it just makes me feel old. But everything makes me feel old. I remember when I realized that a lot of professional athletes' moms were my age. Well, now the moms are younger than me. So so just everything. And everything seems to suck now, too. We live in this bizarro world. The NBA All-Star Game used to mean something, of course, and I sound like an old man yelling at clouds, but there's no longer a disdain for your opponents and teams. They're all banding together. And do we have Draymond from what he was saying last night? We can get into that right now. He was kind of talking about how bad things are, and Charles Barkley had a pretty good retort as well. And I think basically what it boils down to, I think money has just ruined everything. These guys make so much money, and I never begrudge players for how much money they make. I think people should make as much money as they can as long as they're not, you know, burying somebody else or hurting other people in their pursuit of it. And I've never had a problem with that. Even the college players getting money now as well. But there's always a law of unintended consequences. There has been with the NIL and the transfer portal. So now you have a bunch of players, if they suffer through the slightest bit of adversity or they feel slighted in any sort of way or disrespected, they just transfer. And now all the money they're making as well. I mean, my gosh, you've had some of your top players in the NCAA, well, that's not even that, it's just college football now, making more money than some of your starting quarterbacks in the NFL. You're taking a pay cut to go to the NFL, basically. They got to fix that. And now you have NBA players, and a lot of people are saying, well, why don't you just add a financial incentive? Well, what would that have to be? $5 million? $5 million to an NBA superstar who's making 70, that's couch cushion money. That's car ashtray change is what that is. And I think a lot of it started when LeBron decided to not take part in the slam dunk competition. And as a result, a lot of players followed suit and felt it beneath them. They're too cool to do it. So we have to settle for a white G League player, Mac McClung, winning it 3 years in a row. And certainly that's fun to watch, but clearly, I think he's won more slam dunk titles, Mac McClung, than he has dunks in an actual NBA game. He's got two dunks in an NBA game, and he's won three slam dunk titles. But good for him. He makes another $100,000, but he's perpetually trapped in the G League. He's like a guy without a position in the NBA. Apparently he's some sort of a liability due to only being 6'2". Maybe not a good defender. Maybe not a great shooter. There's some limitation there that's keeping him from sticking and staying in the NBA. But meanwhile, he goes in the G League, and I think he's their leading scorer. So Mac McClung probably just going to end up going to Europe and making his money there. But okay, there you go. But the slam dunk competition's lost its luster because I don't think it has much to do with the fact that superstars aren't participating anymore. I just think, how many different ways can you possibly dunk a basketball? How many times can you see an NBA superstar and have some dorky white guy with a ball and he drags his sack over his head and dunks it? How many times we got to see that? Three-point competition? I don't know. I mean, even Trae Young said he didn't like the format. Nobody really liked the format, so they're going to try to fix it. But if you think about it, though, most All-Star games are a joke. The Pro Bowl is now an absolute joke. It's turned into a flag football game. NHL All-Star game, it's 9-8. But I can understand that in a way. Baseball is still kind of competitive, though. Still kind of competitive. But everything else, maybe it's just time to do away with it. But let's hear what Draymond had to say.
This question leads to where he wants to go.
You work all year to be an All-Star, and you get to play up to 40, and then you're done. This is so unfair to Victor Wembanyama, who just took this game really seriously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who just took this game really seriously. When you talk about chasing after the points record, Melo and Kobe and all these guys who had great scoring nights, they don't get the opportunity to do that with this game. Also, we can watch some rising stars. We're about to watch the Olympic team. Now we get the treat of watching the Olympic team play against a U-19 team. Come on, what are we doing?
Well, what are we doing? The players don't even care during the regular season. I know that sounds like a typical cliched remark, but for the most part, you can make that argument. They don't seem to really care until later in the year, March and April, then they'll crank up the intensity, enthusiasm for wanting to play. You have the load management nonsense. Okay, get rid of back-to-backs then. Just get rid of them. Because I think it's got to be the suckiest thing in the world. It costs so much money to go to an NBA game, and this is a common refrain, but it's valid. You spend so much money in anticipation of seeing, Steph Curry come to town. Next thing you know, well, he's going to take the night off. After you spent all that money, you had it marked on the calendar. Now he's not playing tonight. All right, we're going to come back to do a What's Trending. We're going to hear Charles Barkley's retort, and I love his retort. It's just broken. Everything's broken. It's all broken. It's Andy and Randy triple filling in. Very dramatic. Sports Radio, 1990 Game.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Welcome back, Andy and Randy, triple in for Mr. Bunker and Mr. McMichael with you till 2 o'clock. Without further ado, let's just get right into it. Garrett, what is trending, my friend? What is it? What's trending? Well, the All-Star Weekend in the NBA is getting roundly roasted and mocked online. And right now, as we speak, we got Stephen A. Smith, Shannon Sharp, and Kendrick Perkins saying LeBron's late scratch was selfish. LeBron did not play last night because of a lingering discomfort in his left foot and ankle. Okay. But the whole thing was a joke. And they actually stopped the game to honor the TNT crew, which is fine. They deserve honor for what they've done. But why'd you stop it when you stopped it? And why'd that delay last for 20 minutes? And we heard before going to break how it's just being roundly panned, especially by that one particular kind of prickly Golden State Warriors player by the name of Draymond Green. Let's replay that one real quick, and then we're going to get to Charles Barkley's retort.
You work all year to be an all-star, and you get to play up to 40, and then you're done. This is so unfair to Victor Wembanyama, who just took this game really seriously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who just took this game really seriously. When you talk about chasing after the points records, Melo, Kobe, and all these guys who've had great scoring nights, they don't get the opportunity to do that with this game. Also, we can watch some rising stars. We're about to watch the Olympic team. Now we get the treat of watching the Olympic team play against a U19 team. Come on, what are we doing?
Scale of 1 to 10, your thoughts of the format?
10 being the best?
Yes.
A 0. Sucks.
I agree with him. Draymond also talked about the fact that it's a mockery to let the rising stars play on the sacred floor.
Sucks.
That is the All-Star game. Okay. Well, Charles Barkley had a retort to what Draymond Green said.
I disagree with Draymond a lot. You know, we're trying anything. You know, I use the analogy like when your kids mess up the house, you make them clean it up and they complain and they mess the game up. That's why we're trying kamikaze stuff out here right now. So his generation messed the game up. So don't act like he's mad because they're trying to use rookies and we're doing every type of trick to make this weekend exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of a hard thing to explain for whatever reason. Maybe is it the fact they make so much money that breeds a sense of complacency? Look at it this way. As far as a sense of urgency, you don't see a lot of boxers come from privileged backgrounds. They have to rise up from the dirt and scratch and claw for everything till they finally get their big payday. Has all this money just ruined the NBA? I think the rules changes haven't been helpful. They discourage defense. You don't see what do you do now? What do you see on a fast break now? Rather than a guy trying to use his athleticism to get to the rim, stop and hoist a three up. I don't know how many times I've seen sequences online where player shoots a three, misses. They get the rebound, shoot another three, miss. The ball goes the other direction, shoot a three and miss. It's just become unwatchable. And there was an emphasis on more offense is what it was. They were thinking if teams scored 140 points a night, that would seem sexy to people. Well, the ratings are way down in the NBA. And you can also say maybe it's the way, and Garrett, let me ask you this. Do you think it's the way that everything is consumed nowadays? Everything is a la carte and in little bits and pieces. You didn't maybe watch the All-Star game last night, but you're just going to go online and look at highlights here.
Yeah, it's a soundbite world we live in.
Yep.
That's just sort of
short attention span.
Yeah, it's 60 seconds. I mean, you look at what people do with TikTok, and I'm a victim of this as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I do the same thing, so I can't really criticize necessarily. But look, people just consume media differently, and
yeah.
I think that the old way of playing basketball, I think, was a more appealing style. It just was, and you see a lot of the attention starting to shift back to college basketball as a result.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, people are mad and up in arms about this All-Star game format this whole weekend. But I think what it all comes down to is these guys just don't care.
They don't care.
And it's very obvious that they don't care. They're not happy about this format change. Trey Young talked about it after the game, how he just says, it's like, you get guys like Victor Wembanyama, big guys, it takes them a little while to get loose.
Yeah.
And once they get loose, then there's a stoppage. It's ridiculous.
Right.
No, but here, get
this. Continuous stoppages so Kevin Hart could do some comedy bit.
42 minutes of actual basketball was played last night during the three-hour All-Star game.
Wow. That's absurd.
Yeah, it's literally, you have the intro with ads, took 30 minutes. The pregame talk took 10 minutes. Then it's game one that took 12 minutes. Then you have the Mr. Beast challenge that took 5 minutes. Game two happened. That took 16 minutes.
Yep.
A music performance, and then you have the Inside the NBA tribute that took 10 minutes.
And they're not going anywhere.
And then you have game three, and then you ran 80 minutes of ads.
Yeah.
80 minutes of ads. I'm not watching that. What do I have to? There's no entertainment value in this. Why? So I can watch Damian Lillard compete for $100,000 with Mr. Beast? What is this? A YouTube short? I'm not into it. It's terrible. The product is terrible. The players don't care. You got LeBron James who cancels 10 minutes before the damn game. And you got him walking into the locker room, dapping everybody up. He's buddy-buddy with everybody. The NBA sucks. It just sucks.
It sucks. And especially sucks, too. Now, if the Hawks were really good and playing really well, I would be able to forgive a lot of things. But when the Hawks are just stuck in this purgatory of mediocrity, I still think the future might be pretty bright. Jalen Johnson, that just threw a wrench in the whole season. It seems like they had good rotations. You had DeAndre Hunter coming off the bench. And it seems like they couldn't quite put it together, though. They were wildly inconsistent. You had some injury issues. Bogey is just a shell of what he used to be, so he got shipped off. And I think the Jalen Johnson injury just kind of threw a wrench into everything, all the plans. But he gets back next year. There seems to be a pretty good core. The guys you brought in via the trade, they're kind of nondescript, but they're pros. They are pros. They're in the league for a reason. They're not liabilities. They're not buffoons or anything like that. But, yeah, the NBA's got a problem. It's got a huge problem. NFL, for all of its warts, it's still king of the hill. Baseball is hanging in there, but baseball is always going to be a regional sport. Most baseball fans, I'm a baseball fan, but I'm not going to watch the Mariners play the Commanders. I'm not going to watch that.
The Guardians.
Oh, sorry. Guardians, Commanders, all the same thing.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I care about the National League. I don't really care about the American League.
No.
So people are asking, I could go around and I can at least talk intelligently about the San Diego Padres or, you know, the New York Mets or any other National League team. But then you asked me to talk about the Mariners or the White Sox. I don't know.
Oh, especially the White Sox. Good Lord.
Well, the White Sox are a terrible example.
Good high school team being the White
terrible.
Sox.
Yeah, terrible.
Like purposely terrible. But
awful.
You know, everything's just weird. But, yeah, you talk about college basketball. Talk about a bizarro universe. The SEC is the king of the mountain when it comes to college basketball. I mean, they may have 12 teams in the NCAA tournament. And I was watching Auburn, Alabama. That was kind of entertaining to watch. They played in Tuscaloosa. Auburn ranked number one. Alabama ranked number two. No, we're not talking about football. We're talking about basketball. That was bizarre. But that was a fun game to watch.
It was a game that I actually set aside time with friends, and we scheduled time to go to the bar to watch this game.
And it was exciting. Remember,
it was a great game.
Auburn kind of fell asleep, and Alabama went on that run. Then Auburn wakes up and pulls ahead and ultimately gets the victory.
Well, that's the kind of team that Alabama is. I was talking to Sean Tate about this yesterday. They play fast.
Yeah.
And they're a fun brand of basketball. It might actually suit them a little bit better when we get to the tournament. Auburn is a little bit more susceptible to those types of runs. So they're a deep team, but when you get to tournament basketball, all it takes is one sleepy night. One sleepy game.
And you're done.
So Auburn hasn't really had much of an issue with that. Their only two losses are to Florida. They got smacked by Florida, and then they lost to Duke at Cameron Indoor. They're going to be a really tough team, but the way they play is not as conducive to postseason success. Alabama might actually have a little bit more success. They're built a little bit differently. That's all according to Sean Tate, who was on with me yesterday.
I may have to have Deshaun Tate on pretty soon. I normally have him on about this time of year, so because we got the tournament lingering. Braves, we're going to get into the Braves in the next segment, talking about maybe can a new hitting coach kind of fix what was broken with the Braves last year. Braves' first preseason game coming up on Sunday against Tampa Bay, and the poor Rays, their stadium got destroyed in that hurricane. They're going to be playing their home games at the Yankee spring training facility in Tampa. Season opener, April 4th, the Marlins. I swear, it feels like the Braves play the Marlins 45 times every year. And it's always a tedious four-game series. I just don't want to watch the Marlins. And I know they play everybody the same amount of times, or depending on, you know, interleague play and everything else. But it seems like the Marlins are always just right there lingering around. Apparently, when the Jets informed Aaron Rodgers they're going to cut him, Aaron Rodgers kind of was pleading, no, bring me back. Now, he hasn't really said anything about his future right now. That last interview with Pam Oliver in his last game, he said, I'm just kind of in the moment enjoying it. I'm grateful for what this game has provided for me, blah, blah, blah. Well, Will he end up somewhere else next year? We shall see. All right, going to come back. Can this gentleman, hired by the Braves, can he fix the problem that the Braves had last year, aside from the injuries? A lot of questions surrounding the Braves. I still think they're going to be very competitive this year. Not worried about that. It's Andy and Randy, triple in for those gentlemen. Sports Radio 1990 game. Welcome back. Andy and Randy, triple in for those two gentlemen. Sports Radio 1990 game. Flagship station of Atlanta United, the opener Saturday against Montreal, who they banished from the playoffs last year. Hawks will get back into it on Thursday night, taking on Orlando. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit about the Braves, bringing Tim Hyers as your hitting coach, actually from here, from Newton County. And he was actually the hitting coach on a couple of World Series champion teams, the Rangers and the Red Sox. And all those teams were very, very good offensively when he was at the helm. Now, how much difference can a hitting coach make? I don't know. That's debatable. But here's what I do know. After the Braves were historically good offensively back in 2023, last year, they were 15th in batting average, 4th in home runs. But here's your issue right here. 4th in home runs, but you were 14th in RBIs. How many solo home runs did you hit last year? 12th in OPS. And you saw it so many times last year, injury aside, and the injuries were devastating, certainly when you have, you know, most of your frontline players missing 2 months apiece, it seemed like. Ozzie Albies was out for a prolonged period of time. Austin Riley got hit on the hand out. I think it was I can't remember where that was, but he missed the playoffs because of it. And, of course, Ronald Acuna, Michael Harris was out for a period of time. I mean, everybody was. But what drove you crazy last year watching the Braves? Well, you saw a failure with runners in scoring position. How many times you see that? You have a runner on second, third, less than two outs, you don't score a run. The offense didn't come through in important instances last year. And what happens as a result? You start to press. You start to try to do too much to pick up your teammates. And here's why baseball is such a difficult sport. I've said it 100 times, having played Division II college baseball as a mediocre left-handed pitcher who threw 87 miles an hour with movement. Baseball is such a mental game because it's such a slow game. So when you're struggling, so if you're battling an 0-for-3, you're out there in your field, in your position in the field, and you're just sitting there just marinating and stewing on the whole thing. It gives you so much time to be a prisoner of your own thoughts and the negative thoughts that can creep in. That's a big part of it. In other sports, you miss a shot in basketball, you have to get back on defense. Make a bad play in football, we got to get back in the huddle and get ready for the next play. In baseball, you can just sit there, stand there, and just think about your inadequacies as you see them. And that can have an effect. But Kevin Seitzer even said the Braves needed someone who can help the hitters not try so hard. I know that sounds kind of corny, but that's the pressing notion. That's what it's all about. You saw guys. Matt Olson last year, his struggles were legendary and very, very baffling and exasperating. But when you're struggling, you feel like you have to come up and try to hit an 8-run home run. And it's just not going to happen. So what Kevin Seitzer was actually pretty gracious about thinking, well, maybe it is time for a different voice. But this team's going to be very competitive. You're going to have to figure something out until Spencer Strider gets back. Good news about him. He's been throwing on the side, no discomfort so far. The last thing you want to hear out of a spring training is, dealing with some inflammation. Oh, his elbow's kind of sore. This, that, and the other. And Spencer Strider's going to have a start in spring training. And slated, if that goes well, and everything trends appropriately, he might be back by the final week of April. Now, you got to realize this. Spencer Strider didn't actually have Tommy John surgery. Ligaments were not actually torn. What they did, basically, they cleaned up the bone, applied a brace, which is similar to a tightrope procedure for an ankle injury. But Ronald Acuna, that's going to be a big question. What's he going to be after two ACLs? Those issues can linger. Arthritis can be an issue. Is he going to be a step slow, two steps slow. And you remember a couple years ago when he had his first ACL, coming back, he was very tentative in the outfield. Did not trust his knee. He was fine running to bases, running straight from home plate to first base. He was fine as far as that goes, but wasn't necessarily laying out for balls and being as aggressive in the outfield because he just didn't feel comfortable, didn't trust the knee. What's he going to be like? Saw some footage that Grant McCauley took of him hitting absolute bombs in batting practice, but, you know, it's just good to see him doing baseball things. But what's he going to be? I don't think he's going to be stealing 70 bases anymore. I think the power will still be there. Ronald Acuña is probably no longer going to be a five-tool player. He's going to be a four-tool player. That's what it is. He's still going to be a four-tool. Ronald Acuña is still better than most guys in Major League Baseball because I still think he's a generational talent, but I don't think he's ever going to be able to reach that potential of what you perceive a generational talent to end up being because of the two knee surgeries. And that's a tough thing to stomach. Orlando Arcia at shortstop. That seemed to be a glaring issue for the Braves last year, but guess what? Right back there at shortstop again unless somebody unseats him in spring training. I don't know of anybody that's going to do that. But what was the worst thing you could see last year? Runner on second, third, less than two outs. Here comes Orlando Arcia up to the plate. But your starting rotation, Grant Holmes, Ian Anderson. Ian Anderson has not pitched in the majors since 2022. Of course, he was highly touted, very good in the postseason, but just hasn't been able to stay healthy. Hasn't ended up being what we thought he could be because he's been sidelined by injury and struggles and whatnot. Grant Holmes was very good at times last year as a spot starter, very good in the bullpen, but he wasn't necessarily consistent. He couldn't do it start after start after start. So when Spencer Strider comes back, Ian Anderson or Grant Holmes, who's going to be the odd man out? Grant Holmes will probably just go back into the bullpen. Now, there's a lot of questions about the Braves. Okay, what about the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning leading to your closer? Well, you bring in three journeymen is what you did. Maybe that'll be fine. And you think about, you know, the Dodgers spending the equivalent of the gross national product of the European Union on their roster. That's just the way it is. But I'm okay with that because it just gives me a reason to hate the Dodgers like I always did growing up. I'm okay with that. They're a villain now because of that. I mean, the Yankees did that every year, seemingly went out and tried to field an all-star at every position. Well, guess what? That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win. I mean, it's baseball. 162 games. It's a marathon. You just never know. I mean, think about how historically good the Braves offense was in 2023. You just got the feeling they were just going to cruise all the way through to a World Series title. No, they get banished in the playoffs by the Phillies. Because just like good hitting can affect the whole clubhouse, so can bad hitting. It can also be very contagious. And that's the mental aspect that I was talking about since baseball is such a slow game that you have time to sit there and just marinate on your failures. And you get inside your own head, and next thing you know, you're distracted. You're thinking about the results rather than the process. So maybe a new hitting coach can help something go pretty well after all the frustrations last year. And you're like me. Coming into the season last year, you thought, oh, they're going to cruise all the way to the division title. Then all bets are off in the playoffs, but they're going to cruise to the division title. Nope. But you got to remember, though, why did the Braves win the World Series in 2021? It's because they had to scratch and claw the entire season. I don't think they got above 500 until August. But you're battle hardened. And then when you win the division and you have a week off, I think you lose your edge. You can only duplicate so much in your little intra-squad games. It's not the same. The Braves had to scratch and claw. And that's what made them so battle hardened. They could deal with any situation in the postseason because they had that. Last year, or year before last, you kind of cruise into the postseason, and then the Phillies just banished you from the postseason. So I'm optimistic about the Braves this year, certainly. I mean, Spencer Schwellenbach is someone I was excited about last year, mainly because he has five pitches, and you're saying, well, that's probably too many pitches. No, he has good command over all of his pitches. And I love the fact that this time last year, When Spencer Schwellenbach shows up at spring training, Brian Snicker didn't even know who the hell he was. But I got to see Schwellenbach pitch a couple times last year from behind home plate. And the command and the arsenal is very impressive. Chris Sale. I worry about Chris Sale because we know his injury history. And last year, he stayed healthy, won a Cy Young. Or is he going to revert back to oft-injured Chris Sale this year? That's a concern. Charlie Morton's gone, thank goodness. And I love Charlie Morton. As a human being and a person, he's a very interesting, thoughtful, deep dude. But he drove you crazy. He drove you nuts. It was feast or famine with him. He could be dominant. He could give up a run over seven innings and scatter four or five hits. Or he could set you back to the tune of a 5-0 deficit in the third inning after giving up a 3-run homer and a 2-run homer. So that was maddening to kind of watch. As for the rest of the division, yeah, we see what the money the Mets have spent. The Nationals might be sneaky good. They have a bona fide, they have some young studs in their outfield. They can get any sort of pitching, any sort of consistency, and supplement the rest of the lineup. The Marlins are going to be really bad, but they have really good pitching. So their pitching staff will probably be rated come the trade deadline. And a lot of people are mourning the fact that Alex Anthopoulos didn't really do anything in the offseason. Well, Jurickson Profar, he probably should be your leadoff hitter. There's some interesting numbers associated with him. I think his batting average was .380 when he was in the leadoff position. And everywhere else in the lineup, it was drastically diminishing returns. There's talk about Michael Harris maybe leading off. I believe he said he prefers to bat ninth, which is kind of an odd thing to say. But baseball is kind of different now, especially with the DH in the National League. If you can be strong 7, 8, and 9, that helps to flip the order, and you have guys on base when the top of the order comes up.
So, to your point about Jurickson Profar in that leadoff spot, 83 regular season plate appearances at leadoff for the Padres last season alone. Profar delivered an eye-popping .451 on-base percentage.
There you go.
And he had a .380 season-long mark in that category.
Yep. Yeah, I just said the .380. I didn't know the that's
.451 as a leadoff hitter.
And at least we don't have to see the Adam Duvall platoon situation in left field. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, Jared Kelnick. I look. Jared Kelnick could be. I talked to Justin Toscano yesterday.
Yeah.
He's sort of trended down, but I feel like that might end up... You talked about the mental side of the game,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Jared Kelnick seems like that kind of guy. I'm not going to call him mentally weak, but he's that kind of guy who was in his own head.
Yeah.
He's got all
he's
the talent.
He's an emotional guy, too.
He is. If you look at him just in the batting cage, he just... Whoosh,
yep.
Hits the ball. Like, and he just rockets that thing.
And also, I think he's feeling this certain because he was drafted so high. What pick
well,
he was he?
He expects that he have yeah. to... He was the number one prospect
number,
for the
yeah,
Padres.
Number one for prospect the, for the Padres.
Not the Padres, for the Mariners.
Mariners, yeah.
And I feel like he puts all this pressure on himself to be that guy every single time he's up at the plate. Maybe this is good for him.
Maybe it's good for him, yeah.
Maybe it's good for him.
I mean, it could be a valuable... I mean, he had spurts last year where he was very productive. And he does play with a lot of emotion. He's kind of fun to watch, a little feisty. But those emotions, like I said, that can cripple you in baseball if you're emotional like that because there's just too many games, too many at-bats. You just got to let things go. It's like your best closers. If they blow a save, well, that you don't even think about it. You got to get on to the next day. So the emotional side of it is something to bold. I don't know. I mean, Brian Snitker, good Lord, he's forgotten more baseball than I'll ever know, that old cliche. But was he someone that can be that psychologically astute? The guy I point to as far as that goes, one guy I think is so good at that. You know, Phil Jackson was always good at that. Quinn Snyder's very good at that. Quinn Snyder's a brilliant psychologist. You have to have guys like that. So I'm not advocating for Brian Snitker to be gone or anything like that, but you just wonder. And maybe with your new hitting coach, maybe he can play the role of a psychologist, because that's what it boils down to. Because these guys are all extremely talented. It's all about trying to be consistent, trying to not fail with runners in scoring position, try to not struggle in your situational hitting, try not to press, which is what you saw a lot of last year, and extended slumps. For the best players last year. That's what sunk the Braves and injuries. But the extended slumps, it was just absolutely exasperating to witness. But I'm looking forward to this because I'm telling you, growing up, there were so many years, and as a big Braves fan, and of course when I started covering them, you know, 20 plus years ago, but when I was growing up, you knew there was absolutely no hope. You just kind of hope, well, maybe they won't lose 100 games this year. That's basically what you hope for. And then, of course, the 90s was a great decade, but good Lord, they underachieved. You should have won three World Series under Bobby Cox. I mean, good Lord. You have, what, five guys on that team that were Hall of Famers. And you had a legendary generational pitching staff. You could only win one World Series, which was a shame. You should have beaten the Twins in 90. You had no shot against Toronto in 92. Should have beaten the Yankees in 96. You had no shot against the Yankees in 99, though. And, of course, you win in 95. So you should have won more. So maybe things will go better. If they can just stay healthy, that's the main thing. That's the main thing. All right, we're going to come back. Where are we going next? You know what we're going to do? We're going to do a little no huddle. Do a little NFL no huddle. There's lots of things swirling about. No, good Lord. More problems for Justin Tucker. Memo to Justin Tucker. Consensual sex is cool. It's Triple M for Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 99 The Game.